Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking. Welcome to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. I am your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, as always, you know him as Frat House Mike, Mr. Mike McShane. Mike, what's going on, bud?
Hey, how are we doing today, Jonathan? I am stoked.
I know you're stoked, man. It's Christmas for you.
It is.
And people are probably wondering why we're talking about Christmas in February. That's because if you don't know by now, and you should, Mike is a very, very big fan of racing. Today, we have a very special guest with us, NHRA competitor John Capps will be joining us at around the 12:15 p.m. Eastern Time mark here on Fan Junkies Radio. But then it also leads into next week, Mike, which is NASCAR week here on Fan Junkies Radio. As you know, and you've heard from me many times, I'm not a big racing fan. Mike is, so this is why we say that this is Mike's late Christmas.
Like a Christmas gift, yeah. I'm looking forward to it, but make no mistake, Jonathan, by the time we get finished next Friday, you will be a racing fan as well.
Well, we'll see what happens, Mike. once again, today we'll be joined by NHRA competitor John Capps at 12:15. Next week, though, we'll be joined by Sean Corr from Empire Racing. He's actually rolling out at 2 p.m. today for qualifying at Daytona International Speedway, Mike.
Okay.
For ARCA Racing. Right. On Wednesday, we'll be joined by Steve Nelson from Freescale Semiconductor to talk about logistics of NASCARs and, really cool stuff. So not only if you're a racing fan, if you're a fan of cars, that's definitely going to be an awesome show for you. And on Friday, Teen Phenom Lauren Bush of Lauren Bush Racing.
Yeah, the Steve Nelson one's going to be interesting because Freescale was the company that actually designed and developed and implemented the electronic fuel injection system in the NASCAR cars, which they introduced for the first time last season. And there were some issues with the EFIs in many of those cars, and that's going to make for a really interesting program on Wednesday, Jonathan, because not only this year, of course, they're going to continue with the new EFI, but NASCAR's got the new model designs in the Gen 6 design. All of the cars have changed their look for the first time, I believe, since like 2007.
Wow. So that's definitely going to be interesting to hear from Steve Nelson about all of that stuff.
Yep.
So, but before we get to John Capps, let's roll into something that we've been doing here for probably a couple of weeks now, Mike.
Yeah.
And that's our hat trick challenge.
Why we do this, I don't know.
Yeah, we're pretty awful, but
we are.
If you don't know, hattrick.nhl.com, you get three questions a day that have to do with games for that day. If you answer all three correctly, you get a hat trick. Lots of fun. We love it. We have a good time, even though we're terrible at it.
Absolutely horrible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to throw out the three questions right now to Mike. Mike's going to give his answer. I'm going to give mine. And if you're interested in competing against us, sign up to hattrick.nhl.com and look for the Fan Junkies Radio League and join up with us. A lot of fun.
Yep, absolutely.
First question, Mike. Boston Bruins versus the Buffalo Sabres, which team will win?
Yep, I picked the Bruins on this one.
Yeah, well, absolutely, I did too. So let's go to the second question now. We always have a couple of ringers in here. Will Jimmy Howard of the Detroit Red Wings have at least 23 saves against the Anaheim Ducks tonight?
Jimmy Howard has just been incredible in the games that I've watched him in. He turned away 40-some shots last weekend in a game that I watched. The guy's incredible. Will he have 23? I said yes.
Yes, I said yes as well. Jimmy Howard's been great for a few years now. Which team will win between the hot San Jose Sharks and the even hotter Chicago Blackhawks, Mike?
Chicago has not yet lost a game. I believe they're 10-0-3 at the moment. This is a tough call, but I'm telling you, I'm going with the Blackhawks to stay unbeaten.
Blackhawks as well, so kind of looks like
same, huh?
Yeah, we have the same picks here yet again, Mike.
Yep, we did. Yes,
great stuff, as always. We have a lot of fun with it, and hopefully this time one of us – well, hopefully both of us.
We'll both. Well, but yeah, if we all get it right, we're both going to end up with a hat trick.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before we get with the NHRA competitor John Capps, we have a little thing here that you know we're going to discuss that Mike sent to me late last night, and it's something going on in Pennsylvania, Mike.
Yeah, it has a local flavor.
Yeah, some local flavor here for the show, as we are based in Philadelphia. Of course, I'm a Brooklynite from New York City, and I'm stuck here in Philadelphia with Mike. So.
Yeah, I don't know why we let him in, but that's all right. We'll...
I don't know why it came. I don't. You know what? You guys letting me in, putting a little class into Philadelphia. But...
I don't know. Have you updated your papers, man?
No, not yet. Anyway, probably everybody knows about this. Caroline Plaw, she is a big football fan, but also a very, very good women's football, you know, girls football players. She's been playing against boys in many Philadelphia leagues and outlets up here. And of recent, she was on Ellen DeGeneres' show and a couple other shows. Well, it came down yesterday that the, I guess the Catholic Church, Mike, and the Catholic Youth League, which is the CYO, they kicked her out of the leagues for being the girl, even though she's played the last five seasons in CYO.
Yeah.
What do you make of this, Mike?
Well, you know,
what do you make of it?
Yeah, you know, and Jonathan, what do I make of it? Well, you know, you and I, we've talked about, you know, things like the Women's Indoor Football League. We've talked about females competing in, you know, we recognize football is a rough sport.
Yeah.
To me, the whole thing just seems a bit archaic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, the girl has been playing for, as you pointed out, five seasons.
Yeah.
And there wasn't an issue before.
No.
And now suddenly there is an issue. You know, I'm so sick of institutions, and in this particular case, I guess we're talking about the church.
Yes.
You know, being so liability conscious. You know, if that's all of a sudden what this became. Well, you know, you weren't liability conscious last season, the season before.
The season before that. So.
And I would have thought that really when it comes right down to it, the younger she was playing, the more there was a risk of injury than as she gets older.
Yeah.
You know, so frankly, I think the whole thing is, as I said, I think it's a bit archaic, obviously unfair.
Agree. It's very unfair to her. It's very unfair to girls who love to play football, and it's very unfair to girls who would like to play football for a living one day, Mike.
Well, and what message is it sending to our kids? You know, here we go again with the stereotyping that's going on.
Yes, it's sending a very, very poor message. You know, it's like the Catholic Church is trying to get us back into the caveman era where, you know, everything has to be male-dominated. And that's not the case now because girls are very good at what they do, especially in sports now, Mike.
Absolutely.
And I'm, you know, I hate that this has happened to her, but I like that it's happened at this time because not next Monday, but the Monday after that on the February 25th, we're going to be joined by Callie Fennell, who played for the LFL's Philadelphia Passion, is now going to be playing in the Women's Indoor Football League, which is a professional football league trying to start up where girls actually get paid to play and they wear full-on uniforms like the guys do.
Yeah.
So it's going to be great to get her take on it. All I know is that there needs to be a difference maker, and now it's the Catholic Church going against it now where we have females in football, we have females in hockey, we have females in rugby, we have females in mixed martial arts and boxing. And they cannot get ahead because of people like this and decisions like this, Mike.
Yeah, you know, the thing that wasn't even listed here as an option in this from CYO, from the Catholic Youth Organization, the thing that wasn't even listed here as an option was that perhaps maybe CYO would consider creating a all-girls football league.
Yep.
You know, that wasn't even proposed as a possibility. Caroline Plaw was playing for, I guess, a mixed gender, or perhaps maybe she was the only female on an all-male squad. Obviously, because of the way the tenor of things are in today's society, we can't be discriminating per se. And so, therefore, I guess five seasons ago, they allowed her to come onto the team because, of course, then you open yourself up to liability for discrimination.
Yeah.
Now we're going to step in and say, well, no, we can't have this because you know, hey, the guys are getting stronger and what have you, and you're running the risk of injury.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, okay, then my suggestion would be CYO should be offering that they'll create an all-female league.
They should. They should. And, you know, this comes off a lot of things where, you know, she was just on Ellen, and they were talking about what a great football player she is, and she plays fiercely and is so competitive against the males. But then it also comes off of that big high with that little 9-year-old girl, Samantha Gordon, who ended up on the Wheaties box.
There we go.
You know, here are two girls that are hitting the spotlight for their play against males in a male-dominated sport. And it goes to show you that there needs to be a league where girls can play. And the CYO needs to create one.
Talk about a dichotomy of imagery, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you got Caroline Plaw on one side, and then you got Samantha over on the other side.
Yeah.
You know, the imagery going on there is almost contradictory.
Yeah, I mean, now what? Is it going to trickle down to where they're going to tell Samantha Gordon now she can't play football because she's a girl? I mean,
right.
It's sickening, Mike. You know what? It really is. It's 2013. Enough is enough.
Yeah.
Let the girls play sports. If somehow this girl turns into a dominant force and happens to be the first girl in the NFL one day,
mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Why not? You know, why not? You know what, with the WIFL coming out, the Women's Indoor Football League, why can't that be the NFL for women?
Yes, yes.
I just don't get it, you know.
Well, and I'm going to see, I mean, truly, I'm going to see what I can do about perhaps maybe getting somebody from the family or maybe even Caroline Plaw on
Kylie Fennell.
Kylie, when we have Kylie on.
Yep.
And if we could get both of them on simultaneously, I think that would be outstanding.
Yeah.
You know, because Kylie obviously is a perfect example of a female who's going to be successful and is successful playing in this particular sport.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them out there, Mike. There's a lot of them out there. It's a shame. Well, before we get to our guest John Capps, let's bring in a really, really quick call from Big Joe from the Bronx. What's going on, Joe?
What's going on, guys? How's
hey, Joey. How are we doing today, man?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. A little upset that the Rangers lost yesterday, but all in all, I was happy with the way they played. Ryan Boyle, you know, the time him sitting down, it paid off because he played a great game last night. So, Rangers are looking good. I'm not worried about it. They'll be fine. But on the topic you guys are talking about, I find it interesting because, you know, I agree with you guys in a sense that equality for women in sports needs to be firmly put in place. If you have the talent, male or female, doesn't matter. If you have the skill set to get on that field and help a team win, then there should never be any issue regarding, you know, that person being on the team. You know, it's like, to put it in a different perspective, I have, you know, someone in my life that I know, and Jonathan knows also, Tanya Mercado, City Field of Dreams.
Yep.
And she, you know, I told her, and I'm sure you guys will agree with this, as a sports journalist, as, you know, her graduating from Brooklyn College in that field, I told her, you're facing an uphill battle. Because
absolutely.
Even though there are many, you know, females in sports now, you know, sideline reporters and, you know, and whatnot, but I said, you're still facing an uphill battle because you are going to be measured up against males who do the very same thing that you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you're going to find yourself in a situation where you're consistently out to prove yourself over and over and over again. And it's a shame that it's that way because it shouldn't be that way. It should simply be, hey, this person is really good at what he or she does. We want to bring her or him on board to help out, you know, our organization or our team get to the higher level. And, you know, unfortunately, it's like we're still living in the 20th century instead of the 21st century in a lot of cases.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree with you, Joey, and that was exactly my sentiment in looking this particular situation and kind of a controversy over, is that it just seems to me that we're kind of trying to almost turn the clock backward.
It is.
Yep. And everyone's always with the excuses and why and this and that. Enough with the excuses. Let's just move forward with the progress.
Well,
you know, I mean, there's a lot going on in society now where if we do move forward, it's going to benefit everyone involved. It'll be a beautiful thing. But unfortunately, like I said, you're going to have people who, you know, that will continue to fight that.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know what? It's, you know, coming from a media standpoint, I've seen a lot of females break into the industry. some amazing riders, some of the best I've ever seen. You got the Jane McManuses, and you got the Katie Strangs, who what we all love. And then you got the athletes who are so talented, and they take 20 steps forward, and they're leaping and bounding their way to make a name for themselves and to break through that barrier. And then something like this takes them about 40 steps backwards.
Yep.
So
yeah, and it's a shame. It's a shame because even Tanya and Jonathan, this firsthand. I'm sure you know this too, Mike. She's better than a lot of people that are covering teams for major papers, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the fact that she's a female, I'm sure, they're looking at her as, oh, she's just a cute little blogger and nothing more than that. That's mm-hmm. probably what a lot of people look at her as. And she's way more than that. And, hopefully things will change. I'm really rooting for that because, like I said, we need to continue to go forward, not backwards. And
yep.
that's the only way that all this progress and change will occur. And sports media and sports in general will benefit from it. And we as fans will benefit from it. It'll be a fantastic thing.
Absolutely, Joe. All right, Joe, man. Thanks for calling in, man. As always, we appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks. All right, have a good weekend, man.
You too.
Yep, Joe hit the nail on the head once again.
Oh, yeah, he always does. What can I tell you? The guy's like our philosopher around here.
Yeah, you know what, man? We're going to have to put him on the scene in New York soon, man, have him call in and interview some people on the streets, man. All right, man, so let's get to our very special guest today. And joining us right now from Pomona, California, is NHRA competitor John Capps, who is at the O'Reilly Auto Parts Winter Nationals in Pomona. What's going on, John?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
John, how are you? It's good to talk to you, man.
Thanks. You too.
Listen, talk to us. The season's opening up. What did we have, qualifying yesterday, or is it starting today?
Yeah, this is kind of a weird event compared to the rest of the ones we run around the country. Normally we have two qualifying runs on Friday and two qualifying runs on Saturday, and then the eliminations are on Sunday.
Right.
But here in Pomona, because of noise restrictions and time constraints, we only get one run Thursday, one run Friday, and then two on Saturday. So we started yesterday.
What did I see? The qualifying will start today at, 2 o'clock Pomona time, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Starts
okay.
off today with dragsters first, and then funny cars are right after that.
Okay. And you're not running at Pomona, right?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Ron is?
Ron is, yep.
Of course Ron is, yes. So what are your duties this weekend out at the Winter Nationals?
Well, this weekend, at the races that, I'm not running at, I typically go around and talk with, vendors and some sponsors that I'm associated with, different teams, trying to find, any way to try and get out on the circuit on a full-time basis.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's kind of just doing some marketing, PR, and kind of just making sure I keep my face out there for any potential rides that might be coming available.
Okay. I really want our time here and our chat here to really be about John Capps, but we, it's kind of tough. We gotta bring Ron into the picture.
No, absolutely.
We gotta bring the whole family into the picture because you two, and I love it because I happened to see a radio broadcast that you guys did last year, I guess, in Las Vegas. The two of you together, and it's funny because there's that sibling rivalry that's there. how did you two? You guys came from a family of racing, and you got to tell us about it.
No, absolutely. It definitely came from a racing family. When I was born, my dad was a dealership mechanic, and also had his own race car. He had a Fiat Topolino, so an altered that he was running, and so. We were already involved in it at that point. He was helping a few different teams build engines for him and different things. My mom actually, believe this or not, she actually drove a front-engine dragster for a friend of ours a couple times.
John, when I read that, I couldn't believe it because, it's saying about John and Betty, and I'm going, wait a minute, Betty drove?
Yeah, she actually drove my dad's altered as well, so those things aren't easy to drive, and she, she definitely got in.
Well, and it's funny, Jonathan, you and I were just talking about females in sports, huh?
Yeah.
What year was Betty driving?
Oh, shoot, that had to have been, I was, let's just say mid-70s.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's tremendous. That's terrific stuff. Now, last year was a wow. It came right down to the end for Ron, huh?
Yeah, and it was so rough. I mean, I was calmer in a funny car driving, you know, one of these 9,000 horsepower machines down the track. I was more comfortable doing that than sitting around watching all weekend. You know, it was like the highest amount of drama that you could possibly get. You wound up losing by 2 points.
2 points.
Yeah, and our competition, every round of eliminations that you win, you earn 20 points.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we get qualifying points, you know, throughout the weekend. And so basically it came down to, you know, a couple of qualifying points.
Yeah. It was really, when you know, it's funny when you say it was drama, you know, for folks that perhaps maybe have not watched drag racing, you know, one heat is done in about 3 seconds, 3.5 seconds, bam, they're down the stretch. And you must be thinking to yourself, wow, how could there be any drama with that? But my gosh, we were actually sitting here at the frat house. We were sitting on the edge of our seat watching it right up until that very last round. I mean, it was just incredible.
Yeah, it was a full day. I mean, the championship in the other professional category, the top field dragsters, came down to the last two rounds of eliminations of the whole season. And so, you know, there was drama in both categories, and unfortunately, my brother wound up in second place again. I think he's fourth times he's been runner-up.
Mm-hmm. I think that's correct, right? Yeah, I think that's correct. Now, last year you did run a couple of times for, was it Del Worsham?
Yeah, Worsham family. So Del obviously was the crew chief last year for Alexis DeJoria,
right,
Tequila Patron people. He was not driving last year after winning the world championship in the dragsters the year before. So his family still has their operation. Chuck Worsham, who's been involved in the sport, you know, forever and ever and ever with funny cars. So, yeah, I was lucky enough to drive with them last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know what? Let me jump in here real quick, John. I'm the guy here that's not into racing, John.
yeah, I heard that already. I was listening to the show earlier.
I'm not, but you know what?
You got to help me out here, John. We're going to make him a racing fan.
Yeah, we'll drag him out to the track in Reading and Englishtown and get him up on the starting line.
Yep.
And this is one of those sports that really TV doesn't do it justice.
Yeah.
I told him that.
It's definitely a visceral experience.
I told him that. You got to be there. And when you're there, ground level, and those things are flying by at close to 300 miles an hour, 250 miles an hour, it is invigorating.
Well, you know what? I was watching some of the YouTube videos that you sent me, Mike. And, John, I was watching your qualifying in 2011 against Jim Head and against Tim Wilkerson last year and a couple other guys. Now, I'm sitting here watching, and I'm watching your car going from side to side. I don't know what you were doing to me. It looked like it was about 1,000 miles per hour. I couldn't even imagine myself at the wheel of this dragster. Please, for the listeners here that aren't into NHRA and aren't into drag race and all that stuff, take us behind the wheel. You know, what has been some of the top speeds that you've hit? What does it just feel like being behind the wheel of a dragster?
It's driving funny cars is pretty nutty. I mean, there's a lot going on. The dragsters and the funny cars both have the same power plant. It's, we're putting out somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 horsepower, and the dragsters have a 300-inch wheelbase, and ours is about half of that.
Right.
So you can imagine it's a lot more difficult to get the funny car down the track than it is a longer wheelbase dragster. Actually, if anybody's out here that wants to kind of check out, you said put you behind the wheel. If you go to my YouTube channel, I've got some in-camera or in-car stuff on there that it's pretty amazing in the Big Show Nitro Funny Car. And as well, I drive the Jungle Gym Nostalgia Funny Car. Mm-hmm. And there's some in-car camera stuff that I have on my helmet that definitely puts you exactly right in the seat and the sound. And it's pretty amazing. So if you've never seen any of the in-car camera stuff, definitely check out my YouTube, which is, I think, John Capps 702.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, yeah. I mean, it just looks intense. And what are some of the top speeds that you can hit in those cars?
Well, what we're doing right now, my brother has, I think he's one of the fastest runs ever at a 1,000 feet. We don't go to the full quarter mile anymore because of some of the different problems that we've had. We tried to slow the cars down a little bit, so now we go to 1,000 foot. So we're covering the 1,000 foot in roughly 4 seconds.
Yeesh.
My brother's run faster than 4.00 seconds.
Right.
You know, from zero to, you know, over 300 and 315 miles an hour.
Right. Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
It's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. You got it. I'll tell you. I'm taking him to English Sounder, to Maple Grove.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. The first thing you got to do is you got to put him at the far end, right at the where the lights are at.
Yep.
And when you watch these cars go down the track, it's I want to see a picture of his face the first time the car goes by, you know, and then pick him up closer to the starting line, and then that's what really kind of sets the hook.
I'll definitely be looking forward to that. I really want to see one up live and personal now. So
one of the cooler things about it, I mean, for anybody that's ever, you know, worked on their own car or changed the oil or, you know, changed spark plugs or anything like that, even that simple,
yeah,
the real magic takes place back in the pits.
Yeah.
And one of the things about the NHRA drag racing is you get a chance to go right up to the hauler and watch the teams service these vehicles. And it takes them a little over, we'll say 35 minutes, we'll even say 40 minutes to be safe, to completely disassemble the engine, change the pistons, put a new clutch pack in it, reassemble the engine, and warm it up.
It is the most amazing thing to see. And it is done with absolute precision. These guys break this down almost to the block and rebuild it.
Well, yeah, sometimes we do have to go down to the block, and it's like they're army ants, man. They just kind of attack it, and parts are just coming off, and then you turn around to talk about it, and then next thing you know, the engine's back together, and you're like, well, what happened?
I know. And, you know, you got to wonder sometimes, you know, they're working that fast, they're working that, you know, I often get worried and go, I wonder if that's really safe. I mean, have they checked everything? Because you're getting 35, 40 minutes to put this thing back together.
And that's one of the things. I mean, I actually, you know, there's a special relationship between a driver and his crew guys.
Yep.
Because, you know, the last thing that you see is, you know, when you're getting strapped in, is you see your crew guys and they're looking at your eyes, hoping that you're comfortable and giving them, you know, some confidence. And then you're looking at their eyes going, man, hopefully this guy's not stressed out thinking he forgot something.
Right.
Wow.
John, you started your professional career, I believe, in what, on NHRA circuit, 2007?
Yep, 2007 is when I got my first chance to drive a Nitro Funny car. Before that, I'd run the classes that are support series,
right,
alcohol drag car and alcohol funny car, which, you know, it's kind of odd to say they're a slow car, you know, but, they put about 2,500 or 3,000 horsepower and couldn't back cover the quarter mile back then in, you know, 5.6 seconds at 250 miles an hour. And that was considered a slower car.
Now, one of the things I wanted to get into with you a little bit, you know, we've talked about the fact Ron's running constantly, and he's a consistent contender up there for the funny car division. Of course, he's running with Don Schumacher. He's got Napa endorsing him or as his sponsor. Part of the problem that you've had, and you pointed it out at the top of the show, getting sponsorship in a full-time basis to have a team and put together a car on a regular basis. That's been a problem not just for NHRA. I mean, we're seeing that problem across auto racing. We're seeing that problem in NASCAR.
Yeah, you're seeing it in NASCAR, IndyCar. I mean, even F1 right now has, there's one car left, I think, that has an empty seat. And it's all about who's bringing money into the program. And, you know, these things aren't cheap to run. And they're monsters, and they just devour parts. And so you have to keep throwing parts at them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that takes a lot of money to do. And so it's one of those things where you have to kind of figure out, like from my side of things, either, you know, you're lucky enough to have a guy you can, you know, put on salary to go out and search out money for you, companies that want to get involved and on an advertising basis, or marketing, or however you want to put the package together, or like myself, you know, I don't have the funds to hire somebody to go find the money, so I had to smarten up and try and figure out what makes it make sense for these companies to want to get involved in the NHRA Drag Racing Series. So I wear more than one hat, you know. I mean, the easy part for me is getting in the car. That's when I get more relaxed, but everything leading up to it is complete mayhem, from cold calling companies to sending out packages to talking with people and really showing them the value on the marketing side of things.
And you're doing, I mean, you're pretty much doing that on your own. I mean, this is why, I mean, it's shoe leather time for you. You're hitting the streets.
Oh, yeah. And it's one of those weird things that, you know, at the racetrack, there's nobody there that has any money that isn't already spending it somewhere.
Right.
but there's always relationships with, you know, other companies that, you know, may want to get involved on a different level, changing, you know, teams or whatnot. So it's never easy.
Give us an idea, and I'm sure you probably have, I mean, just roughly, to put a car, let's say a funny car, on the track for an entire year, an entire season, and you make every, what are there, 20, 24? I think there's 24 races.
Yeah, we had 23, but they just added Epping, New Hampshire, so now we have 24 races on the season.
What would it cost for one car for the entire season?
You know, you're looking on a lighter budget, anywhere between, you know, $1.5 million to $2 million a year.
Okay.
Wow.
I actually thought it was going to be a bit more.
Well, yeah, it. There are a lot of teams out there that do run on a lot better budget, a lot bigger budget, but they have, you know, a larger name crew chiefs. They have giant hospitality tents, which you absolutely need, in my opinion, you know, to make it a worthwhile event for a sponsor. And, you know, they've got multiple semi-trailers that go down the road with a machine shop in one and spare parts in the other. Mm-hmm. So it's a big, big deal, you know?
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. You were in a couple of movies.
Yeah.
Talk to us about a couple of those movies.
Just go ahead and say it. We'll cut this off right there, because before you say anything else, I was a stunt guy in movies.
I've got three. I know of three. You were in Driven, I believe, Race to Witch Mountain, Talladega Nights. Is that right? Did I miss any?
That's correct.
Okay. Did I miss any, or are those the three?
No, that's the three. And I've also done a lot of commercials and ad work for automotive manufacturers and other products.
So you were a stunt driver in all three of those?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I see you're getting off of that pretty quick.
The Stallone movie was, it should have been a great movie. The stuff we did was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
If you happen to own the DVD of Driven and go into the director's cut, and Stallone actually narrates, you know, through a lot of what they put in the movie versus what we actually did. And there's some other stuff that they did that was not in the movie that they show there that is pretty cool. And we wish they would have made the movie a lot better, but it's what it is.
All right, real quick, talk to us about DrinkHardRacing.com.
DrinkHardRacing.com, that's a group of guys that got together and put together a clothing line. And it kind of was meant as, you know, just a good time to have some shirts for our friends to wear, like when we go to the lake or whatnot. And, you know, it has taken off, you know, pretty amazingly, considering it was just kind of supposed to be, you know, four or five guys wearing a shirt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we have a bunch of different logos. We put the logo on my car a couple of times last year to try and grow the brand, and it's growing pretty well. We're pretty happy with it.
Well, now listen, John, we need you to get a ride. We need you to get a car, because Jonathan and I were talking about it this morning and before show. We want to get a Fan Junkies logo on the car, huh?
Absolutely, yeah.
If I'm
running back there, you guys are absolutely more than welcome.
And listen, you know what? We'd love to have that, but I got to tell you, John, I don't think we can afford that $1.5 million a season. So
no.
Oh, come on.
maybe a quarter of that. How about a quarter of that, Jonathan? Can we scratch that one up?
A quarter of a dollar.
We'll talk.
Yeah.
We'll talk.
Are you planning, listen, is there any chance I can catch up with you at English Town or say Maple Grove later in the year?
I'm hoping to make it out there. Being from the West Coast and a couple of the different teams that I'm talking with about driving this year are based on the West Coast. So making it to the East Coast is pretty tough to make, but, you know, there's always hope. I know I do some other stuff in the Nostalgia Funny Car that we run in English Town and Reading every year. So if I'm back there running one of those things, I'll definitely get a hold of you guys and have you guys come check that stuff out. That's
absolutely
pretty cool to watch also.
That'd be great.
Absolutely. All right, John, listen, we appreciate you being here with us today and giving us an update on what's happening out there in Pomona. We want to wish the best to you. Hopefully you make a connection and get back out there on the track. And the best to Ron as well as you kick off the brand-new season.
Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's a beautiful day out here at the track right now. So it's a little windy, but it's nice. And, you know, we're looking forward to, you know, hopefully Ron and his guys get their Napa know-how and kind of get the job done and come out of here with a victory this weekend. But I'm hoping that I do get out there probably four or five times this year. So if I am, definitely I hope to be back on your show, and maybe we can get some of your listeners out to the events.
Absolutely. And let us know if you can get back out there on the track and what the dates will be. All right, John?
I will do. Thanks a bunch, guys.
All right. You take care now.
Thank you, John.
Bye.
Great stuff, man. Definitely looking forward to getting out there if he comes to Englishtown. I would like to see that up close and personal.
Well, listen, we'll get you out to Englishtown. That's coming up the end of May and into the early part of June. In fact, qualifying will be on May 30th, and it'll go right through that weekend to June 2nd. And I would venture a bet that all of us here from the frat house will probably be heading out to that. We were out to it last year. Maple Grove is later in the year. That's up in Reading, Pennsylvania. That's actually during the what are essentially the NHRA playoffs.
Mm.
That's during the countdown to the championship. But that's in the first weekend in October. It's from October 3rd to October 6th.
Very nice.
Englishtown is a nice time because the weather is really starting to get really nice at that point, Jonathan. And
yeah.
It's a nice venue. And truly, when we were there last year for Englishtown, I was down there exactly as John just pointed out. Take you up to the line. We can take you up to the line where they finish. And to stand there, and you're standing ground level, and you're watching them. I mean, they are at eye level. The cars are coming across at eye level. It's incredible.
Well, we'll definitely be heading there. I definitely want to see that. So,
yep.
We got to look at that. It was nice for John Capps to join us out from Pomona, California, and we definitely look forward to having him on in the future again. So,
yeah.
All right, so let's get into a little basketball here, Mike. Talked about this with you, during our pre-show here, and Michael Jordan came out and said, five beats every time I look at it, he would basically pick Kobe Bryant over LeBron James. And, it made me start to think of a whole Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James comparison that we've heard for many years now, Mike.
Well, hearing it more recently too.
Yes, more recently now. I guess that Kobe's declining. He's going towards the end of his career, and LeBron James is smack dab in the middle of his. So,
yeah.
we have a better look at what Kobe did when Kobe first came out. The comparisons to Michael Jordan, same thing with LeBron, and now we're getting to see what's going on there. So it made me think, Mike, and I want to throw out.
I know, you're going to hit me. You're going
to
hit me.
Two questions to you, and then you can ask me as well.
Yeah.
If you had a choice in their primes to choose between Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, who would you choose between those three and why?
On a fantasy team, I'm going to tell you right now, I would take Jordan in a blink of an eye. To me, nobody embodied the most incredible display of basketball.
Yeah.
As effortlessly and as perfectly as Michael Jordan did.
Yeah. I agree.
And so, excuse me. I think that one actually is a no-brainer. I think the bigger dilemma, Jonathan, becomes when you start to go down your list of three. And then you start doing the Kobe LeBron comparisons. Then it becomes a little more difficult.
No, it does. It does become more difficult.
And
we're
then
heading with this though, Mike, and we spoke about.
I know.
Is okay. I would take Jordan for many reasons over Kobe and LeBron.
Well, and your reasons are going to be a lot more analytical than mine because you're more of an analyst of the game than I am.
But that's what we do here.
Exactly.
So, but basically,
I've got NHRA covered. You got the NBA.
There you go. So where we're going here is which player made his team look better and which player made the players around him look better. And the question now I have for you is now if you're building a team on just these three players I'm going to throw out at you, and we're not talking Jordan, we're not talking Bryant, we're not talking James, they're not in your team. Who do you choose? Do you choose Scottie Pippen? Do you choose Shaquille O'Neal? Or do you choose Dwayne Wade, all three in their primes? Which one would you choose?
To go with Michael Jordan, if I choose
Jordan? No, not even to go with anybody right now.
Okay. Just
to go by yourself, who do you choose?
Who's the better second man, in other words?
Who is the better second man, but who could also be the best first man on your team right away?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm not taking Shaq. And this is all gut, Jonathan. I'm going on gut.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take Shaq. I'm either going to go with Wade or I'm going to go with Pippen, and I'm probably more inclined to go with Pippen. Now, I'm going to couch this by saying it this way.
Yeah.
I believe that in some respects I'm responding from a level of sentimentality and romanticism,
mm-hmm.
because having watched the Jordan Pippen era and having watched that and just getting caught up into it, I believe that I am a victim of the whole Jordan phenomenon.
Yes.
And so therefore, I have a feeling, I have a sense, and this is me being completely, really analytical about myself. I recognize that I have a bias, mm-hmm. and my bias goes back to that time.
Okay.
To me, that was it was some of the best basketball I ever saw.
I totally agree with you on that 100%, but where I'm going from here is now, we've saw Scottie Pippen without Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Scottie Pippen was awful.
Yes.
We saw that Bulls team without Michael Jordan at that point, and the Bulls team was awful.
Yeah.
Now, at the same point, we have saw Dwayne Wade with and without LeBron.
Correct.
We've saw Kobe with and without Shaq.
Yes.
These guys cannot get it done by themselves.
But
did Jordan get it almost done by himself? Because if I pick – listen, I would pick Shaq or Dwayne Wade over Scottie Pippen any day. They are more premier players than I think Scottie Pippen could be by himself.
Okay.
We've seen Dwayne Wade and we've seen Shaq by themselves. They could dominate a game. You never saw that with Scottie Pippen.
I would give a little bit of an edge to Wade, because Wade was doing it down there before. Not that he was doing it, but he was an integral part of the team before LeBron got there.
Yes.
Now, you know, you talk about taking...
But when did they win was when they had the Shaquille O'Neals down there in Miami as well.
Sure.
Yeah. But what I'm going at here is, now if you look at Shaq, from his perspective, he was dominating down in Orlando with basically nobody on his team.
Talk about putting a team, though, on your back.
Yes.
And that's what LeBron did the year that Cleveland went to the finals.
And that's what Shaq did the year Orlando went to the finals against a much better team in the Houston Rockets than what any team the Miami Heat could have faced. Than any other team the Cleveland Cavaliers could have faced that year.
Two completely different styles, and I think the difference from the standpoint of the fan, though, John, when you talk about Shaq versus LeBron, is that even with the mass, I'm talking about the body mass of both of these guys.
Well, we're trying to break it down into the whole Jordan Bryant.
I know.
I'm not basically talking it from the center to the shooting guard position.
I know. I'm mixing it all up here. And I apologize if I'm doing that. But I'm trying to get into the psyche of the fan, okay? And I'm trying to get into the psyche of the fan who, for instance, is my age, okay, who is going to sentimentalize and romanticize about the Jordan era versus the modern fan today that is being raised with Kobe Bryant and LeBron James. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get into that mentality. And when you do, you start to see the differences. Shaq and LeBron have two different styles. LeBron obviously is a little more of a finesse kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. I would say Kobe's more of the finesse guy. With his offense, but I think LeBron can do it on both sides of the ball. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
Kobe's doesn't have awful defense, but his defense isn't the greatest either. So, to me, LeBron can assist. He can rebound, and we've seen where he's had double digits rebounds in many, many games.
Right.
But where I was trying to go with this whole thing is now, if we can do the debate where, okay, we had the comparisons of Bryant. We've had the comparison of James being the next Michael Jordan.
Right.
Have we seen Kobe Bryant, LeBron James basically take on the world together and make players around them look better than the way that Michael Jordan did? And now can we take comparisons of guys like Luke Longley and B.J. Armstrong and Steve Kerr
and put them up against some of these role players that other teams had, like the Mike Millers of the NBA. If you look at it that way, Jordan beats him every time.
I agree. Although there were times, and I think it was conditional. In other words, I think it depended upon the circumstances that Jordan had in front of him.
Yeah.
Perhaps it depended upon the makeup of the team that he had around him. There were times that Jordan was a bit selfish.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you're talking about trying to make players around him look better. Well, he didn't give them the chance because he was a ball hog. Now, there were other times, however, where perhaps maybe because of the circumstances or because of the makeup of the team, he did make other players around him look better. I think we've seen all three guys, all that you're talking about, Jordan, Bryant, and LeBron James. We've seen all three of them at different times do both. We've seen them make players around them look better, and we've seen them not make players around them look better.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. No, absolutely. And all three of them have been selfish players on and off the court.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't say LeBron as much, because one of the complaints about LeBron has been that he gives it up too much.
Well, not really too much in Cleveland, more so at the final shot of the game.
Yeah.
Which is something that, you know, being a player of a LeBron James type and having comparisons to Michael Jordan, it's your job to take that final shot at the end of the game because you are the best player on the court.
Right.
No matter how many people are guarding Michael Jordan, he always took that last shot.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how many people guarded Kobe Bryant, he always took that last shot. So that was definitely one of the gripes against LeBron James, was that he was too scared to take the final shot. Now, was it because he was afraid of being outcasted, or you know what I mean? Who knows what it was? But by him passing the ball off to the final shot instead of missing the final shot, I think he took more dirt than anything.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just interesting that Jordan would choose Bryant, but based on championships. That's where he chose Bryant over. 5-1 every time.
Well, let's do this. How about this one? 347-237-5373. Jump in on the conversation. I'd like to hear what some of our listeners out there think on this one. Because, you know, Jonathan, when you threw it at me on pre-show, I'm sitting here and I'm going, oh, man, I'm going to be put on the spot. And I was actually a bit nervous about it, believe it or not, because I'm thinking to myself, whoa, I'm not quite sure where I would go with this.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question, Jonathan. Jordan said that he would take Kobe at this time over LeBron.
Yeah.
Do you agree with Jordan's assessment?
You know what? It's tough to say. If it was today, I would take LeBron James over Kobe Bryant. If it was over the last bunch of years, I would take Kobe Bryant, because the things that Kobe Bryant has shown in his career is things that we're getting from LeBron James only right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would definitely have to go with Kobe on that. I mean, Kobe showed that he always wanted the ball and he wanted to take that final shot. And if you probably look at his percentage on the final shot, I guarantee he's probably over 500.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James isn't. You know, now all of a sudden LeBron James has a championship under his belt. He looks more comfortable on an NBA court than he did before.
Uh-huh.
But
well, Jordan, in the article that you sent to me, in the ESPN article that you sent to me,
yes,
Jordan obviously is making his decision based upon career. He's not basing it upon the here and now.
Yeah.
Because in here he says, 5-1 every time I look at it, Jordan said. And not that James won't get 5. He may get more than that. But 5 is bigger than 1. So obviously Jordan is making his decision based upon career to date.
Yeah. Well, if you stopped Kobe Bryant's career in the same amount of year span that LeBron James is playing in the NBA right now, if you stopped both of them at the same point, Kobe Bryant would be the better player.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Have you done the prorate on that?
Yes, I was actually looking at a lot of the stats earlier about it.
Really? If we stop Kobe's career right now, and you take LeBron James's career and prorate it forward to the exact period of time, you're telling me that, in fact, Kobe will have a better career than LeBron?
He would have a better career not only in most of the statistical-wise, he would also have it championship-wise.
Well, I'm not worried about championships. I'm going to leave that one alone.
All right, so LeBron has – he has – let me see. He's got 10 seasons now.
Okay.
If you stop Kobe's at his 10 season, he has a higher points per game average as well, I believe.
Okay.
It might be the same. It might be around the same because there's a bunch of, mixed up in there. Kobe only scored 7.6 points per game in his rookie year.
Uh-huh.
So, stuff. I mean, if we go career, I would take Kobe right now. But if we talk about right this second,
right,
I would absolutely take LeBron James. LeBron James this year is showing that he's just insane.
Right.
Insane. Insane in the way he plays. And we've said that because of the whole five, game straight of 30-plus points, 60-plus shooting percentage at the same time, and that broke last night against Oklahoma City, where I believe he shot, 50%? Earlier?
I'm sorry, LeBron?
Yeah, LeBron last night.
57%? Yeah, 57% with 37 points.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's just in on fire right now.
Yeah. What broke the record, where the record wasn't broken was he would have had to have hit for 60% from the floor.
Oh, excuse me. He had six games now. So he did break that record. He was going for a seventh game, correct?
Correct. He was going for a seventh game.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, good for him. I mean, listen, he's playing great. Anytime Michael Jordan comes out and, chooses you, that's great. Good for Kobe, but at the same time, LeBron, you were number two. I mean, if you could pick you guys back to back, you would be going to Michael Jordan's team. So
yeah, let me put your feet to the fire for a moment. Look into your crystal ball. While you're indicating that at this current time, if we were to extrapolate it out, potentially Kobe comes up with a better career at the end of it. And again, leaving the whole championship thing out of there, because I think that that's an X factor. I'm looking at simply points, rebounds, all that sort of stuff, all those numbers that come into consideration, Hall of Fame, otherwise. Will LeBron go down as the second best NBA player ever, or will it be somebody like Kobe or?
It's not going to be either of them. They'll definitely be in the top 10.
Okay, well, I guess. All right. Then
yeah, but I would still
Jordan,
and you do have a case for guys like Kareem and Bill Russell before.
And Will.
That's my opinion.
I understand. Yeah. All right.
But to be in the top 10 the entire NBA history is an incredible feat. So
will LeBron beat Kobe Bryant? I guess there's my question to you. I'll make it simple.
If LeBron stays healthy and he plays the same amount of years Kobe would by the time Kobe retires, I think you're going to see that LeBron is going to have the better numbers stat-wise. But I don't think he's going to match up championship-wise. That's just my opinion. So
I agree with you 100%. I think that in the end, he will have better numbers. I do not believe that he will have as many championships.
Yeah, when it comes down to the end, when they say, okay, well, after 20 seasons of each player, who would you pick? You're going to say LeBron James.
Yes.
Over Bryant. But if you go all three, you're always going to say Jordan over them, no matter what.
Right.
That's just the way it is, and that's just the way it's always going to be, because no matter what they do, they'll just never be a Michael Jordan. And, we'll never see another Michael Jordan again, because the way the NBA is set up now, it's totally, totally different than when Jordan was around.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very, very good point.
He played against guys who were known for defense and rough defense and throwing people into the stands and stuff. You don't see that in the NBA these days, Mike. You don't.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. That's my kind of game. I went to a basketball game and a hockey fight broke out. I mean, that's what I like.
Listen, 30 over 30 points per game for Michael Jordan in his career.
Yep.
So.
Well, I think it's a fun debate to have.
Oh no, it is. It is.
Because it's all speculative.
It's fun, but unfortunately, the bad thing is that people get very, very heated. The Michael Jordan fans, the Kobe Bryant fans. Dude, you know what? It doesn't really matter who's number one, two, or three because they're all going to be in the top three right now.
Yeah, I agree.
But people do not put Bill Russell in that category. And that's what really pisses me off is because if they would have counted blocks as a statistic, you probably would have saw Bill Russell being the all-time greatest center in NBA. You know, team player as well. You know, you gotta throw the Wilts, the Kareems, and you know what, the Elgin Baylors and all these guys. You gotta throw them in that category, and they never do. It always comes down to Jordan, LeBron, and Kobe, and it's a shame.
Isn't it because of the nature of the game? I mean, I think in fairness, as you pointed out, Jonathan, the game has changed just in the past 15, 20 years. To be going back and stepping back that far, don't you think that has a lot to do with just the way the game has changed?
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? If I always wonder if you take LeBron and Kobe and you drop them into late 80s, early 90s NBA, if they would be successful. I don't think they would be. Now, at the same time, if you took Michael Jordan and dropped him into 50s and 60s NBA, would he be successful against some of the career highlight players of that era? Who knows? Because there wasn't a three-point line. There wasn't Duncan. There wasn't a lot of things. Now, you take that out of Jordan's game. Would he have been successful?
Wow, that's a really – boy, I'd like to have some time to go into that. Because I think Jordan could be. I agree with you. I agree with you.
I don't think Kobe and LeBron could be.
I agree with you. I don't think Kobe and LeBron would be. Because, as you pointed out, I think the defenses back in the 80s were a lot tougher, a lot stronger, and that's going to slow down their point production.
Listen, let me tell you. I love the NBA still to this day. The game has been watered down. I've said that many times before. There is no way Kobe and LeBron gets into the paint in the 80s to 90s NBA. No way.
Not as consistently. Let's put it that way.
No way. Because it took Jordan effort beyond belief for him to get into the paint in the 80s to 90s NBA. And if you don't believe me, go back and watch some games from even just the early 90s, 92, 93, 94, 95, where you're going to see some of the best NBA basketball that you will ever see in your life. Watch the effort that Michael Jordan puts in to get anywhere near that paint and watch the people that he can actually dunk over in those games. Some of the best centers that was ever in the NBA, Mike.
But if you were to take Jordan and put him into Bill Russell's era, Jordan was playing with such a different style, he would have completely blown them away, in my opinion.
I don't know, man. You know what? If you watch Bill Russell, man, some of the flashiest players of that time, they couldn't beat Bill Russell. I honestly think Bill Russell was before his time.
Well,
you know, as a defender.
Russell would have beaten Shaquille O'Neal up underneath the board, that's for sure.
Listen, you know what? When Shaq came in, you had guys that didn't know how to post-defend in the Hakeem Olajuwons, the Patrick Ewings, the Dikembe Mutombos, whatnot. He changed the game of basketball, Shaq, as soon as he got in.
Yep.
You know, he was a power forward in a center's body that was lifting weights at that time. It's just, you know, different times, Mike. But, you know, great stuff. You know what? One day maybe we can get into that. Maybe we can have Chucky Brown or somebody join us and talk about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That would be a lot of fun.
All right, Mike. Well, another show is now over. It was a great show. We want to thank John Capps from the NHRA for joining us today. Talking racing with us and funny cars. Great stuff. We hope to get out to Englishtown one day and see him there. And so I can become an NHRA fan.
There you go.
As always, frathousesports.net. Check out our very own Mike McShane and Sidekick and the crew over there. Great stuff as always. And fanjunkies.net, sports social networking at its best. And we will see you Monday for NASCAR week, Mike.
Yep. I'll be here tomorrow, Jonathan.
Well, you'll be here tomorrow, too, as well. I forgot.
Yep, 3 o'clock. Yep.
Saturdays.
Yep.
Your Blog Talk Radio on the Fan Junkies Radio Network. So for Mike McShane, I'm Jonathan Ragus. We want to thank you all for listening in to Fan Junkies Radio, and we'll see you all tomorrow for Frat House Saturday, and then Fan Junkies Radio comes back Monday with NASCAR week as we will be joined by Sean Corr of Empire Racing. Once again, thank you for listening. We'll see you all soon.
Catch you then.